Hello.
Hello.
Hello. And welcome to the Bitter End Podcast with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
Oh my goodness, we are here to watch Highlander, The Search for Vengeance.
Yep, we're nearly done with the Highlander movies, and this one is the anime one.
So this is a Japanese-made cartoon.
Yes, feature length. It's not like a mishmash like The Adventure Begins, and it was made with the producers, like I don't know which producer or producers, but of the Highlander films and TV series. And actually, we watched the trailer. It looks pretty rad, I gotta say.
This trailer, dude, it's full of blood.
Yep.
More blood than there has been at any other point in the season before.
Yep, there's a post-apocalyptic future.
There's a big tank. There's a guy with a big tank. He's just riding along, and the narrator with an American accent is like, "For rebellion, for freedom, for Highlander." or something. Yeah, you know, it makes it sound like a perfume advert.
Yep, yep. McLeod, the new fragrance.
Colin McLeod, who seems to have an actual Scottish accent, which is jarring as fuck, man.
Yeah, best Scottish accent I've heard in this series so far.
Well, it's the first time. I mean, no Connor like, obviously, Christoph Lambchop has his Zeistian accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Adrian Paul, the guy from the TV series, he's got his kind of like, hey, I'm like a surfer dude,
yeah,
and I've got a beef with you, brah, accent. There's some proper Scotsman in this fucking thing.
Yeah, and because Sean Connery doesn't count because apparently he was Egyptian Spaniard.
Well, even our guest last episode, an actual Scotsman.
Yeah.
Even he does not count Sean Connery as an actual Scotsman.
Exactly. Can I ask, Todd, are you much of a fan of anime? Are you familiar with the genre at all?
Well, look, guys, I've seen Akira.
Mm.
Does that count?
Akira counts, yeah.
Akira counts. That is, to date, probably the only anime I've seen. I'm really sorry. I don't have a beef with it. I was too busy watching...
Never engaged with it, yeah.
I was too busy watching Hellraiser to engage with Japanese anime. Tom, I am aware that you are a bit more of an aficionado.
I mean, I would not say that I'm an aficionado, but I do dip my toes in the water, like Akira, I love that movie.
Well, the trailer said from the producers of Ninja Scroll.
Not seen Ninja Scroll.
I've heard of that, though.
Yeah, I've heard of that. And also, I think one of the shorts in the Animatrix, which was like... they did like... It was like a DVD thing of like animated shorts based in the Matrix verse, which I didn't watch because the Matrix fucking sucks.
I have an opinion about those, even though I've only just heard about them now. My opinion is that I am 99% certain they are garbage.
Yeah, but I have no idea. I just know that I don't like The Matrix. But the animation looks pretty tight, though. I think for those, even like the Matrix stuff, like whatever you might say about like the quality of the stories and that franchise, it looked good. So I think this is going to look good. I mean, my thing with like anime is like, I like some of it. I'm not diehard.
Well, I'm prepared for a change of pace. I'm ready for it.
I think a change of pace will be welcome, especially just to like, you know, to soften the blow of losing Lambchop in the last film.
I'm still reeling, man.
I know.
I still wake up in the middle of the night clutching at my bedsheets going, Lammy!
You shouting his name, hoping that he'll regenerate, bounce off the magnetic field that covers the Earth and appear in Scotland, doesn't
he? I feel like we legally need to state at this point that Christopher Lambert is not dead.
He's not dead. As of recording this podcast, he is alive and well, to the best of our knowledge. Right, so we should dive into this in a minute.
Mm.
But before we do... The IMDb game.
Yes, okay, Doth if we're Beckham. Playing this, I have to take my jacket off, man. I've been wearing my jacket this whole time. If we're going to play this game, I need to just fucking...
Street rules.
Right, street rules. The jacket's coming off.
Right, okay. So.
Right, it's off.
Highlander, The Search for Vengeance came out June 2007.
Okay.
The last movie we watched, Highlander Endgame, that was a 4.6 on IMDb. The highest, still the first movie, 7.2. Do you want to hazard a guess about what The Search for Vengeance
did
clocks
that, what,
in at.
7 years off?
7 years after, yeah.
I think this one's going to be strong comparatively. I'm going to say 5.5.
It's better than that. You're going to be happy with this. It's a 6.9.
What?
This is the highest, bar the first movie, highest rated on IMDb so far.
My goodness.
So I'm really, you know, pretty up for this.
Well, let's get this party started, bruh.
Whoop, whoop. See you later. Right, okay. Whatever you say, Highlander.
I guess.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. So we've just watched Highlander, The Search for Vengeance?
He kind of found vengeance.
Oh, he definitely did. He definitely did at the end. It was a happy ending, sorta. So,
I feel quite deflated.
Do you?
A little bit. I found it, I was amped. I was pumped. I was amped like a champ for this one. And it's left me feeling a bit sad.
Oh, really? I don't have quite such a strong reaction as that. I got the impression we were watching it that you were not feeling it. I think there was a lot of bits in there. There were some bits, like, bits I enjoyed and I thought were really cool. And I think, unfortunately, those were the bits that weren't sort of like explored more in the film. And a lot of those, there's a lot of stuff in here that could be from any number of anime films.
Yeah. I would describe this as being the lightest plot of any of the Highlander film so far, to the point that I am fairly confident that if you were to challenge me to,
yeah,
I could recount the plot of this film in 60 seconds or less.
Okay.
Without missing anything.
Okay, well, should we do that?
Let's give it a try.
And then we can unpack it a little bit more. Right, okay. And are you ready? 5, 4, go!
Colin McLeod, not Connor McLeod, is a immortal from the Scottish Highlands. Back in old school Scottish days, the Romans invade and kill everybody. But Colin is obviously immortal, so he survives. Turns out that the head of this particular faction of Romans is also an immortal. Colin tries to get vengeance on him multiple times over the centuries, every time he loses. Along the way, he makes friends with the ghost of a druid, who never actually helps him, but just follows him around and mocks him. Ends up in the futuristic New York, where a virus has wiped out almost everybody except for a few people that live in the sewers. The evil Roman is in a big tower at the top. He's trying to get more virus out to kill the last few people. A band of gangs from the subway team up with Colin to help him get to the top of the tower, where there's one more sword fight with the evil Roman, kills him, the end.
This has been the Better End Podcast, folks. We'll see you next time.
See you next time. I mean, did I miss anything out?
You did get pretty much everything in there. I think the only thing that was missing was, like, the love interest.
The love
interest.
I missed that. Oh, I couldn't. So, yeah, he did have full sex with a lady.
Yes, yes. So,
That's the film?
But yeah, but let's recount it properly. Let's do the Tom Denny recap. Let's go back. Because, I mean, it's, It's weird. Like, I don't feel like it wasn't like a bad film. It wasn't great. It wasn't like necessarily, I think, a bad anime or a great anime. I feel like it's one of those things, like, I felt like it was maybe one of those films where they had a script for something and then they inserted Highlander into it.
Yeah, it definitely had that vibe. So just to go back, I'm obviously being a little bit flip with the story here. Yeah. There are some cool moments that we want to address.
Yes, I think the coolest bit is probably the beginning, like, 10 minutes of the film or something like that.
Yeah. Let's dwell on that.
What happens is the film kicks off, and, like, it really does kick off, because basically the first shot you get is this sequence on a battlefield in Scotland with someone like getting an axe swung into their head, or getting like, it's basically opens with like this big battle of like just people being gored on swords.
It's so gory. There's this awesome bit where a guy gets an axe swung. The axe is horizontal and it hits him in the bridge of the nose, and it slices clean through the top half of his head, but from the like nose down, his whole head is still there. It's mental.
Yeah, like it's super gory and violent. And it's just like straight in. It's kind of just like bam! Limbs being chopped off, stabbing, all this kind of business.
Yeah, I was all for it.
Yeah, and you basically get, I think it starts like you've got like these few clips on the battlefield, and then Colin McLeod, who is the McLeod protagonist of this movie, gets killed.
Yeah, just in a random fight.
Yeah, he gets, you know, well, not, you know, like not gets his head chopped off, but he gets like kind of run through on a broadsword, and then like there's some text comes on screen saying like, in the future, like the world is destroyed and global warming, nuclear war, you know, your standard post-apocalypse kind of fare. And then it's we're flashing forward to the year 2187 in New Jersey. So basically the film goes, oh, Highlands of Scotland, battle, 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 post-apocalypse, in about that much amount of time as I have taken to explain it.
Yeah, yeah. And this bit is probably the coolest bit.
Yeah, this
of the
is
film.
Definitely the coolest bit in the film. So it's this big visceral opening, and then you're in the future. So kind of more of a Highlander 2 slant.
Absolutely.
Instantly.
The skies are black, like everyone's living in the rubble.
Yeah, the world is fucked.
You've got a crazy porcupine guy with like a chainsaw and these weird dreadlocks. If any of you guys listening have seen the Clive Barker film Nightbreed, there's that first monster that you see in Nightbreed. This guy looks exactly like him.
Right, yeah. So what we've got now, we've got Colin McLeod, like in New Jersey, and he's on the hunt for somebody, because obviously he's immortal, he's not dead, he's lived all of this time, and he stumbles across like a gang of basically mutants. They've all got like fucking like razor sharp fangs. There's a guy with like two heads. They're all, one of them's got like a massive horn growing out the center of his forehead. They look super fucking cool. Like these guys, like I was like, oh yeah, this is gonna be good when these guys showed up. And then it's this guy called Malik, who is like their leader, who has got like a massive chainsaw broadsword.
This guy's gnarly. I really liked him.
Yeah, and he has a brief fight with Colin, and Colin's like, oh, you're not the one I'm looking for. And he's like, well, too bad, I'm the one you got. And they have a fight. And the awesome ending to this fight is like, Colin like flies through the air and slices at the guy, and he's like, hey, is that all you got? And he kind of starts to walk forward, brandishing his big sword. And then his head just like, he walks a few steps and then his head falls off, and his head falls on the floor, and his head just kind of goes like, what?
Yeah, he keeps talking.
Keeps on talking while the body keeps on moving, and then walks onto some escalators because they're in a shopping mall that in the post-apocalyptic future still has like a functioning escalator. And the body, still standing, goes up the escalators, and then the quickening happens. So this body is on the escalators with lightning shooting out of the neck hole.
It's like, love a neck hole.
Yeah. And that was pretty fun. I think, and then that was like the best bit of the whole film.
Yeah.
And Colin basically takes Malik's head and he goes into New York to claim a bounty.
Yeah, New York's all falling apart. The Statue of Liberty's like partially sunken into the ocean.
Yeah. Oh, so this is the important thing that happens in like the little bit of text at the beginning, is that like now there's no, the post-apocalyptic like way of the world is there's no countries, there's just city-states. So I guess maybe it's a bit like Judge Dredd. You've got like Mega City One, you know, like you've got just like just cities in the wasteland, and New York is one of those cities. And he rocks up there. There's like this massive tower in the middle of the city. Like there's all this rubble with this massive mega monolith tower, and he goes there to get the bounty.
Who's on the top of the tower, Tom?
It's Marcus, who is, turns out he's like the main baddie of the piece. Guy's name doesn't start with a K.
What the fuck? There's a couple of times when they refer to him as Captain Marcus, and I, in my notes, every time they did that, I had to make a note about him. I wrote it down as Captain Marcus with a K.
I should have just written it down as Kmarcus.
Yeah.
So he's the bad guy, and he's basically been Colin's adversary throughout all of time. There's a lot of like flashing back and forth, and the flashbacks are very long.
When we first see Marcus before the first big flashback, he is on top of this giant skyscraper. And he's just playing the electric guitar by himself on top of a skyscraper, rocking out.
A totally wailing solo. Well, it's actually probably the most Highlander-ish thing to happen in a Highlander film, is just have this guy like...
But not perfect.
Like a wailing solo.
But it's like so lovingly animated. They're obviously like, yeah, this guy can really play. Let's really dwell on this. No. Cut away from the sword fight. People are going to want to watch this guy wail.
The thing is, I was just disappointed that there wasn't more of it. I thought, like, this is going to be his thing. That, like, the bad guy was just going to walk around the whole time just, like, laying down gnarly licks while, like, doing evil shit.
But the other thing about Captain Kmarcus is that he's from ancient Rome, and his like driving motivation throughout this is that he was traumatized by the fall of Rome, and he's trying to kind of get back that former glory. He loves ancient Rome. He's trying to rebuild it. He's trying to make it happen again.
Yeah, he's trying to create like a...
No electric guitars in Rome.
Oh, but there is a shot where... back in Rome where they go like cut to him in his tent, and he's sat there with like a lute. So it's... So like... There isn't like a big lute solo, but I was just like, okay, like he kind of like upgraded from the lute.
All right.
But you just know that like, you know, while Rome was burning, he would have been there doing like this like really gnarly lute solo, like doing like fret tapping and stuff like that.
It's just like when you walk into a guitar shop and there's someone there who just wants to try out the most expensive, ridiculous flying V.
Yeah.
This is the solo that that exact person plays on that exact guitar.
Yeah, definitely. So anyway, like his whole, yeah, so like Marcus's whole deal, he was like a big commander in Rome. And I think he's another immortal. He loves power. He loves dominating and kind of like building his perfect vision of the world. And being a Roman, he comes into contact with Connor and no, it's not Connor, Colin, and the
mate. You gotta get that I right.
Just, yeah, fucking hell.
It's almost like they made the names close as they could on purpose.
Yeah, I know. It's really fucking annoying. The MacLeods like fight the invading Roman forces.
Yeah. Do you want to know what the ultimate sick burn is? The Japanese producers, I assume, of this film paid to the nation of Scotland is during this first flashback when it, because every time there's a flashback, it says the year and it says where they are. There's a bit where they go to feudal Japan, 16th century. Mm. You know, there's a bit where they go to ancient Rome in whatever century it was. In this, it says something like, oh, the year is 147, Northern England.
Burn,
guys. Do you mean north of England? Because that's where Scotland is.
No, it was just like
whatever. It's all one. It's all one bit. I mean, there's a scene where
he's from Manchester, isn't he?
Yeah. There's a scene where Colin died in the Wolf Scotsman, gets massacred in Northern England, and then runs when he wakes up. He runs barefoot and ends up in Stonehenge.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know how well some of our international listeners know the geography
of
the
nearby.
UK. I mean, it would be a day's drive.
And they didn't have cars back then.
No.
The other, like the big kind of, like, thread that's, like, kind of, like, tying Marcus and Colin together, and, like, why Colin wants vengeance, is that Marcus kills Colin's wife.
Mm. Oh, this bit's really good, actually.
Moya.
So, she's nice. She's very... she's the closest we have in, I think, any of these films, really, to a a strong female lead. She's not a lead because she's barely in it.
Basically, Moya kind of like drugs Colin, I think, so she can go and talk to Marcus to try, and she offers herself to him to try and stop him from massacring her people.
Yeah.
And when he says no, she, plucky young thing, stabs him with a big old dagger, and so she thinks, great, I sorted that out.
Oh, his death scene is so brutal. He's like, he's like bleeding, his eyes are bulging out.
Yeah, it's this really long, lingering shot of just like his bloodshot eyes and blah. The most graphic of all these films. But obviously, him being immortal, he comes back, he gets her, and like how he kills her is pretty bleak.
So historically accurate.
So basically what he does is like, well, because you've done that, you're going to watch everything you love die. So he goes and massacres all of the MacLeods, or like all of the clan. And while he's doing that, Moya is crucified on top of a hill, like facing the battle, so all she can do is watch helplessly as everybody dies while she herself has been crucified. And during this battle, Colin gets topped.
So I wonder if this is an interesting point to bring up what I think is the one big rules change of this film, actually.
Okay, well,
it's a little bit early in the episode, but shall we take a quick visit to Rules Corner?
We're going there, kiddies.
Rules Corner.
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 Okay, so Rules Corner is traditionally Tom's thing, but I wanted to pipe in with this because I'm not quite sure if you, Tommy, fully spotted this rule. It's just about the way that this film handles death. So in previous films, the rule has, even I think in all of them, the rule has always been that an immortal can only be killed by having their head chopped off, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes they seem to think, say it suggests it's only if your head is chopped off by another immortal. In other films, they say, oh, it's just as long as your head gets chopped off.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. But I have always thought, well, what if a 10-ton truck fell on Connor McLeod in one of the old films? Would he just like dent the truck? Would he get squashed? What would happen? And it never really,
what happens, yes,
that,
to his
that
body,
never
yeah.
really gets touched on. I think there's a scene in Highlander 3 where he falls off a great height and breaks the bones in his legs, and
he falls down that lift shaft. Yeah,
yeah. But that's the closest they've touched on it. In this, there's multiple times because there's quite a few immortals in this film. Anything that would kill you or I or any other human person, it kills these immortals. They experience that death.
Yeah.
Their eyes roll into the back of their heads. They get, you know, there's someone gets shot in their head, and they're like, there's a hole in the head. They're bleeding. They are dead. Like their eyes roll back. They experience the pain. And then time passes, and then they very slowly heal, and then come back to life. So when Marcus takes down Colin for the first time,
yeah, he splits his head in half,
and we get a POV shot from Colin of a knife coming towards his face.
Yeah,
and this is really cleverly done, actually, because the knife goes between his eyes, his vision then splits as his head moves into two parts, and you get this kind of split screen effect. And then blood fills the screen, and then he is dead.
Yeah, and he his body falls in Stonehenge, so Marcus can't finish him off because the Holy Ground rule. But he lies there for ages. Like, it takes like weeks for his head to seal back up and for him to come back to life. I did notice this rule that a lot of people actually die, because the thing is, Colin dies so many times. Like, there's loads of flashbacks of him like throughout the ages tracking down Marcus and basically getting owned at every given opportunity. Like, either Marcus like nearly kills him but can't finish him off for some reason, or someone he's in part of a battle trying to get to Marcus's opposing forces and he gets run through by like 17 spears or something like that. That's like the different thing they did with this, which I think that was a good thing to explore, because for like a series about immortals, they don't really explore what that means physically other than you just don't die. There is the bit in Highlander 2 where, like, Connor and Ramirez get shot to pieces, but then they just get up.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, which is a different...
Like, they just bounce back.
A different approach. I mean, yeah, there, I think I mentioned it already, but there is a scene in this where one of the immortal characters gets a single bullet in her head.
Yeah,
and she's just...
Straight
out,
through her
out.
Brain, yeah.
Yeah, understandably so. I mean, yeah. But, yeah. She does then come back again later, but...
But yeah, like, she's... But then she's flying a helicopter when that happens, so her neck gets spun round as well. So, like, she wakes up and has to, like, crack her neck back and things. Mm. And that adds a different kind of, like... Kind of like this undead... aspect to it, which you feel like maybe they could have played up on like more in some like the other films. Maybe it's just because of like what would have been involved in like stunt work or things like that, but like you feel like you could have had these characters just being kind of like doing things that other humans wouldn't do, like throwing themselves out of buildings and doing like serious harm to themselves.
Yeah.
But in a way where like, well, that doesn't affect me, I can afford to like get stabbed on something or crushed by something, because
it's also cool to see
my head's okay.
Yeah, it's cool to see those effects. I think maybe that's just me as a horror fan, like, but I want to see the impact of them jumping, you know. I don't want them to just be this stupid video game character that can just jump around and run through hails of bullets and just come out the other side spotless.
Mm.
As long as their head doesn't come off. Like, I want to see everything is like a tough decision. You know, they're like, well, I can do this and these are the risks. And admittedly, I probably won't fully die, but like, it's going to hurt and it's going to put me out for the count.
Yeah. And they make a point in this of saying that pain is real. So when Colin comes back from the dead and he's an immortal, he's not like a Ramirez character, but there's this guy called Amagan, like this druid ghost.
Yeah, so he's there when Colin wakes up for the first time after his first death,
and he
in Stonehenge.
Yeah, and he explains to him like basically the nature of him being immortal. I don't really know why that is a thing, but they just needed to have that kind of character in there.
Yeah, he never helps. He never does anything.
Yeah.
He never intervenes.
He just like rags on him. And probably with good reason, because Colin has so many confrontations with Marcus, it appears, over the centuries. And he's just so shit. Like, it's like, it's very frustrating for him. You can tell, because he's like, his character is like a real surly dick, like the whole way through. He's not particularly likable in the way that like you'd have like old Christoph Lambeau doing his really awkward wisecracks. In this, I kind of made a note here that Colin is the Rambo of the Highlander franchise, and that he's even got the red bandana, but he is like this really damaged guy who's just kind of haunted by the past. And he's like, when people in New York like want him to like help them fight Marcus, he's like, oh, it's not my fight, and like he doesn't, then he gets drawn in. Like, there's this kind of like slightly like Rambo-ish quality about him.
Comparing Colin McLeod from this film to Connor McLeod of the other films, I think the big difference is that Colin just doesn't put the hours in. So if this was Christoph Lambchop as Connor McLeod, there would be a 40-minute montage of him training on a hill, on a hilltop, in different coats, doing, you know, like sharpening his sword, doing all of his moves, just trying to get better, trying to train. He traveled to Japan. He trained with an old man. The thing is,
I got to feel sorry for Colin, because you actually see that he's fought in a lot of wars and battles over the centuries, far more than you see Connor fighting.
There's
in
a cool
and
World
apparently
War II bit.
All Connor had to do was stand on a hill and wave his sword against the air, and he suddenly got loads better. This guy actually fights people and still gets killed at every turn. The World War II bit, there's like because obviously like Marcus in World War II is a Nazi, and they have like a confrontation on the wing of a plane.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Anyway, the whole thing with Moya, so she's dead, and Colin, keep on wanting to say Connor. Colin is like, I will hunt down Marcus. I am on a search for vengeance. And this thing, like, Moya says to him, don't try and kill him. While she's dying, he's like, don't go and kill him. It'll only lead to your death. You have to swear to me. Swear to me you won't go and, you know, you won't go after Marcus. And he goes, I swear. She dies. I will have my vengeance.
And off you go. But that's the thing. What I think is interesting about his character is he's fundamentally not a good fighter, really. And he goes to fight Marcus, loses. Marcus, like, just lets him be and walks off. And then he gets up and he's just like, right, where's he gone?
Yeah.
Where's he gone? Just go straight for him.
His only drive. And this is the thing, like, you know, said, like, it was interesting. This is the only Highlander film where it is the goodie who is the one pursuing the villain. Marcus doesn't give a shit. Like, when he finds out that Colin has killed Malik at the beginning of the film, he's kind of like, oh, bring him to me. He's like, oh, well, I've got the opportunity to kill him. But he's just gotten on with his life and his own plan. It's Colin who is like, just can't let it go. And over the years, I think he had another wife called Deborah.
Yep.
And again, like, this is the point where he got killed, and very similar to, like, the first Highlander, when he comes back from the dead, his clan turn on him and he has to leave, and so he has to leave Deborah. And then in the future, in New York, he meets Dahlia, who is she's part of, like, a resistance. So, like, In this future city, there's, like, the big tower with Marcus and all his, you know, subjugated people. And then anyone who doesn't want to go along with him, they are living, like, in the ruins as, like, kind of, like, fugitives. And she's one of the fugitives. And there's, like, a virus that's killing a lot of people. The people in the tower have the vaccine. People outside don't. She kind of, like, bands together with Colin to get in the tower to go and steal some of the vaccine.
That's the plan.
That is the plan. Along the way, they kind of hook up.
Mate, they don't just kind of hook up.
Oh, yeah.
They hook up their faces off.
Yes. Oh, God. It's a really awkward animated sex scene.
As if some of the Christoph Lambert sex scenes in the previous films weren't, like, hard to watch enough. The fact that this is a cartoon. Now, I am not used to watching anime, like I'm sure many of our listeners are. I know you are a bit more than me, Tom. I'm not knocking it as a genre, but I'm not used to it. And cartoon boobies are, there's something jarring about them, guys. I'm sorry.
I agree with you on that one. It's kind of, oh, hello. Okay. That's,
and they just couldn't get any consistency.
Yeah, it's just, oh yeah, yeah. Like you were kind of like, is it me or her boobs just kind of fluctuating in size? I think it's basically when they got to doing the sex scene, they're like, we'll just draw these bigger. Yes. We know what the audience likes.
That's kind of what happens.
Yeah. But, oh, okay. So it turns out that Amagan, like the grumpy ghost who keeps on talking to Colin, says that basically Moya didn't die. Like, the ashes that Colin buried is not all there is of her. There's her spirit. And that Moya was also Deborah and is also Dahlia, that spirit has carried on. But Colin has been so racked by, you know, like, his, like, search, his quest for vengeance, that he's just never been able to see it.
Mm. It's deep, man.
Yeah. So they kind of, they hook up something rotten and then go off to fight Marcus. Oh, there's this whole thing with the virus. So this is virus that is killing a lot of the people who, all the fugitives or what have you. And basically Marcus is developing a more potent strain that will have 100% effectiveness and kill everybody that hasn't got the vaccine. Because basically Marcus has an immortal female sort of like second in command, who has kind of like a relationship with, and it's like he's gonna kill everybody on the planet and it'll be just the two of them.
Douchebag.
Or something.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's a little vague.
It's a very generic kind of like bad guy plot. It's like, I'm gonna release this and people will die because I don't know. Oh, yes. His immortal hench lady.
Oh, yes.
She is the one that Todd mentioned gets shot through the head.
Yeah, she's kind of cool.
She's pretty cool, and she has a big old fight with Dahlia, and she's a tough cookie as well. Like, she's, like, there with, like, some, like, big kind of, like, submachine gun thing shooting down these really creepy-looking, like, robot spider guards that Marcus has, which is pretty, yeah, that's pretty gnarly. And she kills the immortal woman. The immortal woman stabs Dahlia through, and then you're kind of like, oh no, now Dahlia and Colin can't be together. He's going to have to wait for her to be reincarnated again at some point. And she's like, well, you've killed me, but I'm going to take you down with me. And she sticks a fucking grenade in the mouth of this immortal female character whose name we did not get. I'm not sure if it was really mentioned, and blows her fucking head off. Which
it's
is
so cool.
It's pretty cool.
Hats off to you, Dahlia.
Yeah. I mean, and then that just leads for Colin to have a final battle with Marcus, which he very nearly loses again. He gets cut to pieces again. Like, he's really bad at fighting.
Here's my problem with this fight, though. Like, surprise, surprise, Colin wins the fight.
He does.
He chops off Marcus's head. My problem is, there's nothing he did different this time in order to win. He's not done any more training. He didn't try a different tactic. He's just, this time they fight, and this time he wins. There's no progress.
Yeah, and it's really weird, because in this one, he was kind of thinking, oh, for Dahlia or something. But it was like, he's always been motivated by vengeance for the death of a loved one.
Yeah, just much old. So yeah, just a much older loved one. So there's not, it's not really like we've gone on any great journey with the character.
Yeah.
He got lucky that time.
Yeah, it's really weird. And then, like, there's this, like, massive quickening, which kills all, like, the robot spider guards, all of, like, the mega tanks that
all
Marcus
has. All the virus
has,
that all have been the released into
yeah.
the
air. So, like, yeah, like, the 100% effective virus got released, but somehow the quickening of Marcus killed the virus, all the baddies, none of the goodies.
Yeah. And this isn't
very
just something
convenient.
We're inferring. A character in the film literally says, the quickening killed off the virus and all of the evil robots.
Yeah, it's like, we just wrote ourselves out of that plot hole. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then Colin walks over a bridge. Credits roll. The end.
Yeah, it just kind of finishes. And you're kind of like thinking, like, oh, so are there any other immortals out there? Is he mortal now?
I wonder if they were trying to set this up for a series of anime for more to come.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, yeah.
Because it just doesn't have an ending.
It just trails off very quickly. Yeah, it's an odd one. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it.
I feel bad that I was kind of a bit down on this at the start of the podcast, because, you know, talking it through with you, like, there is a lot more about it that I like, that I should have kind of been focusing on that. I think the thing is that I'm sad about two things.
Yeah.
I'm sad that anime's cool and all, but I wish this was live action. I think if you did this exact same script in live action, it would just be way cool. It would be expensive and hard to do and ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it would just be, it would be so over the top.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
That would be really exciting. The other thing, I miss Christoph Lamchop. I want him back, and we're not getting him.
I know.
He's gone.
We'll always have the original films with him in, but yeah, I know.
I'm just feeling that loss.
Yeah, it is sad. I mean, I think as an anime film goes, I haven't seen, like, loads of, like, anime movies, and it's one of those things where, like I said, like, I've seen Akira, but I almost don't kind of count it in the same league as this, or like anything like Studio Ghibli films. Like, that is also, like, that's not, I don't count that almost as anime. That's just, like, a different kind of Japanese animation, just because, like, this, like, has what I kind of recognize as, like, certain, like, tropes of anime stuff that I've seen, and, like, I don't really like the design. Like, in this is the kind of anime where all the characters look like they're about 7 feet tall. They've all got super long faces, and, like, everything's, like, they're really weird elongated bodies and, like, tiny heads on giant torsos and stuff like that. And it's not the kind of character design that I really like in anime stuff.
Yeah, and it's a style choice. I can appreciate it, but
yeah. I mean, that's my take home on this. Like, yeah.
I have a little fact for you, Tom. If you want a little perking up.
Yeah, yeah.
During one of the brief sections of the film where I was tailing off a little bit in my interest, I was like, I know, I'm going to look up an interesting fact about this film and see if I can reclaim some keen interest. And I did.
Okay.
I stumbled across a little nugget. Do you know who did the voice of Colin McLeod?
No.
Well, I'll tell you, Tom. The voice of Colin McLeod was done by a Canadian voice actor by the name of Alistair Abel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if his name doesn't sound familiar to you, that's absolutely fine.
Mm.
But it should, because Alistair Abel has a very, very small but significant on-screen role in the film Freddy vs. Jason.
What?
He plays a character called Officer Goodman.
Yeah.
Who I think is just a cop with a gun who gets killed.
No way!
Yeah!
It's another fucking crossover! It's another
crossover. We've had Rusty Schwimmer and we've got Alistair Abel.
My God, that is well discovered.
I was just like, I wonder who the guy that does the voice is. I clicked on his IMDb page and it's got two pictures. It's got the poster for Highlander, The Search for Vengeance and the poster for Freddy vs. Jason.
No way.
Say what?
That's crazy. I like that fact.
Fun fact.
Thanks, brah. That's good.
No problem. You look like you needed it.
Yeah. No, that's good. Now, to really pick us up, should we have a little bit of story time?
I think that we could all do, with just slowing the pace down a bit, just putting your feet up, light the fire, put the kids to bed.
You've had a hard day. It's time to chill out. A little,
You got your nightcap on your head?
I do. Tell me a bedtime story, Todd.
Okay, well, this is the section where I read highlights from the novelization of the first Highlander film, Highlander, There Can Be Only One, written by Mr. Gary Kilworth. Now, there is some update with my attempts to contact the author Gary Kilworth.
The quest for Kilworth.
The update is that I have emailed him again and he has not replied still. but I will keep trying, guys. I will keep trying. This is a section from the novel that describes something that doesn't actually happen in the Highlander film. This is new material. In the first Highlander film, there is a character called Castagir, who Connor meets in Central Park. Now, Castagir is another immortal who looks like he's potentially from Africa. Like, maybe he wears like a big, long sort of kaftan-y thing. They meet in Central Park. They seem to be friends. They drink a bottle of whiskey together.
These are the guys when they talk about, I haven't seen you since that party, and they do the flashback and his friend isn't there.
That's absolutely right. So this is a bit in the novel, which is what happens the night before Connor and Castagir arrange to meet in the park.
Okay.
Because you might wonder, how did he know to meet him in the park then? What, did he email him? Did he have a mobile phone?
Paged him. Or fax, perhaps.
Yeah, fax. Well, no. They had a chance meeting in New York City before. So what's happening here is Connor McLeod is riding the New York subway and he's having an altercation with a gang of street punks.
Ooh.
And they're in a gang called the Caligulas.
Nice.
Connor's minding his own business. The Caligulas come on the subway. They start hassling him. They're just hassling him, man. And this is the scene that follows in which Castagir will make an appearance. If you are comfortable and ready to begin, this is story time with Todd Lee T. The leader turned to his gang, who now had a variety of weapons on show, from motorbike chains to knuckle dusters. A small zip gun came into view. You catch on real fast, man. Don't he, guys? I mean real fast. McLeod stayed where he was, ignoring them. They seemed unsure what to do next. Usually people did a lot of things when they were threatened, but they did not ignore them. The leader walked over again. So vacate, man! Fuck off, replied McLeod. Although he had not used the word violently, the youth sprang back as if he had been slapped in the face. At that point, a black guy from the other end of the carriage had wandered down and now took a seat opposite McLeod. He smiled. How are you, McLeod?
Castagir! I don't need to ask what you're doing in New York. We seem to have a bit of a problem here.
The leader of the Caligulas was looking from one man to the other.
Well, ain't that nice, he said. Two buddies gonna go down together.
Castagir said, is this open to negotiation? You fucking what? The boy took out a butcher's knife from within his jacket.
I'm gonna cut your balls off!
McLeod and Castagir both leapt from their seats and put their backs to the end of the car. Convinced that the duo did not have a gun on them, the youths began to advance, making menacing gestures and shouts. The leader was grinning, his stubble beard split by his red mouth. McLeod said,
ready?
When you are, said Castagir. And thus ends story time with Toddly T.
Oh, I like that. They should have had that in the film. I would have liked that. It sounds like Highlander versus the Warriors.
Yeah, it's really got that cool, like, Warriors-y vibe. I really like it. I get the impression that maybe that scene was in the original script and just had to be cut, possibly. Yeah. It would be interesting to know if they filmed it.
Yeah. No, that would have been really cool. I also really like the notion of telling someone to fuck off not aggressively. Like, I don't think there's... You can't.
Christoph Lanchop can. Just picture him.
Fuck off.
Does he ever swear in any of the films?
No, that's the thing. I also found that quite jarring because, you would just know if he was like,
hey, fuck you, Ramirez. I'm calling McLeod of the fucking Clan McLeod, you fucking cunt.
Well, look, man, we better put this tiger to bed because we have run long on this one.
Okay, well...
It's a weird film. I enjoyed it, but not as much as some of the others.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting addition to the franchise. If I was going to try and rate it against the other films, it's just almost I just think it needs to sit on its own. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely canon.
Yeah, but then, I don't know, we'll have to get into this at some point, but there's just all these different McLeods, and I just don't know how that works.
There's Connor, Quentin, Colin, and Duncan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just don't know, quite how we account for all these McLeods. But, yeah, I think it's what, if you're interested in it, go and seek it out. It's not boring, and at the end of the day, that's what you want from a film, as long as it isn't fucking boring.
If you're at all interested in any of the what we've been saying about any of the other Highlander films, and you are someone that likes anime, then definitely watch it, I would say. I can't vouch for whether or not it's a good anime.
Yeah.
But if you are the kind of person that...
likes it.
That likes kind of anime, thing. Check this one out, probably.
Yeah, it's got spider robots and mutants and giant tanks. So next time, we'll be watching Highlander... The Source.
Yes. Now, this is, chronologically, this is actually the last one of the series, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But that won't be the last episode we're doing because we're going to revisit Highlander 2, the Renegade version.
Mm.
Effectively, it is the end of the franchise.
Yeah. So this is, to date, going to be the last Highlander film that's been made. So this one is going to be picking up with Duncan, I believe. It's a made-for-TV movie. So I'd imagine it's going to continue with kind of the storylines from the TV series.
It's going to be weird watching a live action one without Lamchop.
Yes, and especially as all the references to the TV series stuff that was in Endgame that we were just kind of like, well, I kind of can guess what they're driving at, but I don't really get it. Just to have that without that thread of Christopher Lambert is going to be kind of weird. I'm slightly worried about watching it. I think it might be a real stinker, but we will have to wait and see next time.
Thank you for coming on this ride with us, guys.
Yeah.
Until next time, I'm Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
If you are at all interested in chatting to us, please drop us a line on Twitter or Facebook. We are at Bitter End Pod. Don't forget to give us a review on iTunes. If you have listened to all these episodes and you haven't done it yet, I know I keep saying it. It's because it's really nice when people do it. If you haven't done it yet, maybe now's the time. Maybe now.
Yeah, we appreciate, when we hear from people, we get feedback from people.
Get a post-it note out, stick it on your computer, and write, don't forget to write a review of the Bitter End Pod. Just so you don't forget, that would be really nice.
Yeah. Don't write it on your screen. Don't do that.
No, that won't wipe off. Cool. Well, catch you next time, guys. Thanks for listening.
Bye.